This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. With Zika dominating the headlines since it arrived on U.S. shores last year, information on how to avoid getting the virus has been disseminated throughout the U.S., but there are still pockets in some of the most Zika mosquito-friendly parts of the country where education is still needed. Later in the show, we'll talk with the people working to get that information out there. But first, the first case of canine influenza or dog flu was confirmed in Florida this week. As of today, there are more than a dozen reported cases of the highly contagious virus in North and Central Florida, including the Orlando area. Officially known as the H3N2 strain of canine flu, the virus has cropped up in other corners of the country and the world, but state health officials say this is the first time it's been reported in Florida. Dog flu isn't fatal, and right now experts say it can't spread to humans, but it still can cause serious health complications for your pets if it's left untreated. Effective vaccinations are available, but before you head out the door to your local vet, listen to what our guests have to say about dog flu. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Cinda Crawford with the University of Florida's College of Veterinary Medicine. Welcome to the Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you.
Also joining us today is Bonnie Tucker. She's an ER veterinarian here in Southwest Florida. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you very much.
We are talking about dog flu in Florida. What do you want to know about canine influenza and how to protect your pets? Call in and ask our experts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. Cindy Crawford with UF's College of Veterinary Medicine, give us a little background on dog flu. It's been elsewhere in the U.S. and the world, but where did it come from, and how did it get to Florida?
Well, first of all, to avoid confusion, I think we need to let the listeners know that there are two strains of dog flu. The older strain emerged in Florida, as a matter of fact, in the year 2004, and from 2004 till 2009, Florida was the hot spot for this first strain of canine influenza virus to be identified, and that is the H3N8.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2015, a new, different strain of canine influenza virus was identified in Chicago, where it infected more than 1,000 dogs. And this strain is called H3N2. So it's a very confusing terminology here. The two strains sound alike, but they're quite different. And what we're dealing with here in Florida now is the spread of the new H3N2 canine flu virus.
So before the first virus that you mentioned, the first flu, was there just not dog flu before that, or had it not been identified?
No, there was no known susceptibility of dogs to influenza viruses before 2004.
Okay. And then you mentioned that the two viruses are very different. Are they different in the way that they show their symptoms?
They have some similarities in the symptoms that they cause, but the new strain that we're talking about mostly today, H3N2, makes dogs a little more sicker, and also more dogs are prone to developing pneumonia than with the earlier strain.
Now, are you still seeing the earlier strain crop up here and there, or did it kind of peter out?
No, it's still circulating in small locations in the country, so it is not petered out. As long as we have dogs in the country that have no pre-existing immunity to that earlier strain, it will continue to infect dogs. But this new strain, the H3N2 virus, has only been in this country for 2 years, and it has already swept through thousands of dogs in 30 states, and now Florida is the next state that it has entered most recently.
So it's gotten into 30 states, and now it's in Florida. How far is it into Florida? Is it kind of coming north to south, it sounds like?
Well, we don't have a feel for that. We have documented cases here in North Florida where I am, as well as documented cases in Central Florida. And the number of documented cases continues to increase on a daily basis. So it's not at a plateau yet. We are still identifying confirmed cases
Mm-hmm. So ER vet Dr. Bonnie Tucker, you're with us in the studio. Have you heard of anything around our area?
I have not seen any cases myself personally as of yet. You hear rumors spreading that there have been some cases in Sarasota, but I think the key is Dr. Crawford is using the key word is documented. And a tricky part about documenting this type of virus is the testing. A lot of clients will come in with their pets. They'll show classic respiratory signs of coughing, sneezing, fever. But unless you actually go ahead and do the diagnostic tests that are necessary to go ahead and confirm the virus, oftentimes you could have cases that may go undocumented. And because the pet or the pet parent can't necessarily pursue the actual diagnostics, so you treat for the treatable, especially on emergency sometimes when you can't actually get the confirmed diagnosis. So that's the tricky part. Up at the University of Florida, they're doing their research, and thank goodness for that, but they're able to get more documentation by getting people to do the testing. And that's a really important thing to allow the doctor to do the testing to confirm it.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm wondering if you have people that are unable to get the test, why would they not want to get the test? Is it expensive to have them tested for this flu?
It's certainly probably a financial constraint. I mean, from the reason to get the test is because then it allows us as the doctor and also the pet owner to be able to prevent the spread of the disease elsewhere within the community, elsewhere within that pet's house, if it's a multi-pet household. Sometimes people just can't afford to go ahead and pursue the testing. So you're not going to say, well, I'm sorry, can't help you. I mean, we're going to do what we can to go ahead and treat for, what we suspect.
So when you're working in the ER and you do a test, you get a test on a dog and it comes back that it has – and that information then automatically goes to the University of Florida?
Yes, and that's documented, and we also let the state veterinary office know as well. So whenever we have an outbreak of any type in the animal community, like rabies or something of that sort that's contagious to animals, to people, other species, we have to document that.
So and Dr. Crawford from University of Florida, I wanted to ask you, what are the exact symptoms that people need to keep an eye out for with their dog?
There is a onset of a cough that is very frequent, coughing, sneezing, runny nose. Some dogs feel pretty puny. Their appetite may be a little off. They may want to sleep a little more. Those are the most common signs, but I have to tell you, I agree with Dr. Tucker, without doing actually diagnostic testing, you cannot diagnose or tell that a dog has canine influenza virus infection just based on symptoms, because there are many more respiratory viruses that commonly cause coughing, sneezing, and runny nose. The difference, the real reason to invest in a diagnostic test to determine if your dog that has now started coughing, not feeling well, showing some signs suggestive of canine flu, the real reason to get a diagnostic test is because if they do have the flu virus, they must be isolated from other dogs for 4 weeks.
Wow.
This is a highly contagious virus. Nearly all dogs exposed to it will become infected and sick. And, home isolation for 4 weeks is a long time to a pet owner. If the dog does not have this H3N2 flu virus based on diagnostic testing, then the isolation period may only be 1 week.
But it's a 4-week isolation period.
Yes.
4-week isolation period, because dogs that are truly infected with H3N2 canine flu are contagious for up to 4 weeks.
Wow. I mean, maybe they can go out to their own yard, though, for restroom breaks,
yeah.
right? All right.
Of course.
Yeah, I just want to make sure on that, because inside the house, that's not fun for anyone.
And as Dr. Tucker said, many pet owners are a multi-dog household. We're definitely a dog-loving nation. And so it may be that one dog in the household starts with the clinical signs first, and then subsequently over the next week or 10 days, all the other dogs start getting sick. So the whole household, if it's a multi-dog household, will have to be isolated for 4 weeks.
Now, will they get it again? Can they get it, get rid of it, and then get it again from another dog? Or if it's still around in the house, like re-catch it? You know how toddlers kind of pass it to the parent, and then the parent has it, and then the toddler gets it again?
Yes, I know that very well. But no, once dogs are infected with H3N2 canine flu virus and recover, they have immunity to prevent reinfection. We don't know exactly how long that immunity lasts. Is it a year? Is it 5 years? Is it a lifetime? We don't know the answer to that. But they should not get reinfected and get sick again with that same virus for at least a year.
All right. We are talking about dog flu. After more than a dozen cases of the canine flu virus were found in North and Central Florida, give us a call and ask our vet experts your questions about dog flu at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Now, I read earlier, Dr. Crawford, that people don't get the dog flu, but can they carry the dog flu?
Yeah, we have to be very careful about the terminology. You are correct. After 13 years with experience with the original canine influenza virus and now this new one tagged on top of it, there's no evidence that either infect people. The difference between the H3N2 canine flu, besides it seems to be more virulent than the H3N8, the earlier one, and it seems to cause more pneumonia. Another big difference is that the H3N2 flu virus can infect cats.
Oh, that's a big difference. So it can make a cat sick and then put a cat susceptible also then to developing pneumonia?
What we have seen in cats, and it has spread into cats and animal shelters in this country in the last 2 years, is that it causes a typical respiratory infection that people are used to seeing in cats with sneezing, runny nose, runny eyes. The cats don't cough, but what they seem to do is a lot of lip smacking and drooling.
Yeah. And then I'm going to ask Dr. Bonnie Tucker, if humans can't get the disease so much, can they still, like if they're in contact with a dog that's had this flu, can they have, I don't know, like little dust particles of this flu? I don't know really what the scientific term would be for.
Yeah, so
can they carry that? It's like we went to go to Orlando. They were around a dog that happened to have the flu, but they didn't know it. Can
right.
they come home and give it to their dog?
So in the vet world, we call these things fomites, a fancy word for saying little germy particles. And so certainly because the virus is so strong and contagious that it can get those particles can get onto into the dog's bowls, into the dog's toys, into the blankets. So we're very aggressive in our hospital about if we have an animal that has a contagious disease, that we go ahead and make sure that we isolate them. We wash those clothing and we dress up like hazmat suits basically to go ahead to prevent spread. So yes, your clothes have the potential to carry the germs. So if you think or suspect you may have been in contact with a sick animal, I always go home from my workplace, and it's like a scene from Silkwood. I just spray myself down and just so I can prevent my own animals from getting sick from certain types of viruses that I may have been exposed to from other animals. So I think it's more of a precautionary measure than anything else. Fortunately, the virus itself doesn't stay alive in the environment for a long period of time, but still better safe than sorry, just to disinfect. And it's a simple disinfection, soap and water and just regular laundering.
Just keep it all clean.
Yep.
So, and then if somebody thinks that they have a dog that has dog flu and they want to bring it into the veterinarian ER, what kind of things would you advise them? Do you want them to call ahead so you can come in the side door where there aren't other dogs?
Yeah. So our hospital, Florida Veterinary Referral Center, we have set up a protocol for these cases specifically, as well as for other type of contagious diseases like parvovirus. If you can call ahead as the pet owner to say, hey, my pup is having respiratory signs, then what we can do is we can meet them in the parking lot. We can go ahead and bring them in through a separate door where they're not going to be exposed to all of the other animals in the waiting room. We have an isolation ward where we'll keep the animal and go ahead and do all of our workup with separate equipment, separate instruments, the special foot baths for disinfecting, so that and we assign one person or one doctor or one technician to that case. And then they leave a separate door too, so that we're trying not to spread that disease to other pets and also other animals in the hospital that may be immune compromised from other diseases that they may be there for.
And when you have a dog and you did discover that it has the flu, what can you do for it? Is there medicine that can make it feel better?
Yeah. Or? So basically, the mainstay for treatment for respiratory infections, especially for pneumonia, is supportive care. So if the animal has a fever, then they're going to need to be treated for hydration, because if you have a fever, you know, they say starve a cold, feed a fever. You want to go ahead and keep them hydrated. Oftentimes, we'll get them started on antibiotics just to cover for secondary bacterial infection that can develop. And also going ahead, they'll lose their appetite. So we keep them hospitalized and try and keep their chest clear with nebulization techniques and pounding on their chest to clear the lungs. And oxygen support if necessary if they're really struggling to breathe. So.
Mm-hmm. We have a call coming in from Charmaine in Naples. Charmaine, what question do you have? Charmaine, are you with us?
And I occasionally miss a little bit. So if you've already said this, I'm sorry. I'm feeling a little paranoid because I had a dog that was off the beam, not horribly ill, no respiratory, but just not wanting to eat, which is very unlike her. And she did throw up a couple times. Then she seemed okay. However, my cat started getting very sick and did pass away. And I'm very concerned, wondering if we might have had something like this going on there. And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
All right. Thank you for your question. So is this is dog flu something that could cause a fatality in a cat?
Any type of respiratory infection has the potential to get to the point where if an animal starts to go into respiratory distress, meaning they're having difficulty breathing, especially in a cat, the cats are very sensitive. And they, unfortunately, they can go ahead and go into respiratory or cardiac arrest. However, the signs that the pup was having with the vomiting and the lethargy, that can be secondary to a million different causes. So it's very easy to get paranoid because everybody's thinking flu, flu, flu. But the likelihood is that the dog didn't pass a flu to the cat in this particular case if the dog wasn't showing any respiratory signs. I can't say 100% for sure that that wasn't the case. But if in doubt, and if you're, you know, if your pet is feeling ill, better safe than sorry, bring your pet to your vet.
So, yeah, just yeah. Take him in there and get it checked
exactly.
out. And then I wanted to ask Dr. Crawford, is there any indication that certain breeds are more susceptible to catching the flu, or is it kind of an equal opportunity virus?
Equal opportunity, all ages, all breeds, both sexes. So this is equal opportunity virus. Now, the dogs at high risk for exposure are those dogs that have a social lifestyle. More and more, we are a mobile society, very social society, and we have involved our dogs in increased mobility and social interactions, too. So dogs that are more likely to be exposed to a respiratory pathogen such as H3N2 canine flu virus are those that participate in group activities. So that could be boarding, doggy daycare, dog park, dog shows, agility trials, any of those types of activities where dogs in the community come together with other dogs from that community and other communities beyond that for a reason.
Like doggy daycare or the dog beach and dog parks, things like that, where they're all kind of around each other. Now, are there certain breeds that are more susceptible to complications from catching this kind of virus? Dogs that kind of already have respiratory stressors on them, like maybe pugs or little French bulldogs?
That is a common thought that people talk about. I will tell you, over the years, seeing dogs with confirmed influenza infection, the ones that do develop pneumonia tend to be across the spectrum of breeds. It's not necessarily the dogs with the very smush face anatomy, or like pugs and Bostons and Pekingese and bulldogs. We've seen it in dogs with very long noses too. So I would, as a veterinarian, I'm sure Dr. Tucker agrees with me, we are more worried about dogs with the smushed in faces when they do get respiratory disease, whether it's an infectious disease or some other medical problem is affecting their breathing. We do worry more about those dogs.
And then is it similar to the flu in that the young and the old are more susceptible to complications from it? You know, like in human populations, they always say that there's the flu, but the young and the old are the ones that usually you need to look out for a little bit more carefully because they could develop complications. Is that true also with dogs?
Well, again, in my experience over the last 13 years, there does not seem a predisposition for a worse disease, a more serious disease in the young or the old. As a matter of fact, most of the dogs that I have seen with pneumonia due to the flu virus have been between the age of 1 to 8.
Okay.
So sort of in the prime of their life.
Wow. And is there a vaccine?
There is. There's a vaccine for both influenza viruses. We've had a vaccine for the older H3N8 since 2009. Unfortunately, not many dog owners have elected to take advantage of that vaccine. And we've had a vaccine available for the newer H3N2 strain that we're dealing with now for over a year now. But again, not many dog owners have elected to utilize this vaccine to protect their pet. And I will say, now that we know the H3N2 viruses in our state and the number of documented cases are increasing on a daily, weekly basis, it is not too late to talk to your veterinarian about getting your dog vaccinated against canine influenza.
Is that kind of a one-time deal, or do you have to do it every year?
We have to start off with a series of two shots so to get the dog's immune system primed and started starting to develop protective immunity. And then it should be repeated on an annual basis, just like we get an influenza vaccine every year.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on the line. This is Sarah from Punta Gorda who has a question for us. Sarah, what would you like to ask?
Hi. I'd like to ask the doctors. I'm a dog groomer, and I'm just worried about my clientele. Is there a way of preventing the spread of this flu? I do groom out of my home, and I do clean with an antiviral, specifically for dogs and cats. But maybe you could help me with that. I also have another question, and I'll get off the air. I do have a 3-year-old Bichon, Clipe, and he has been exhibiting. He's having episodes of grand mal seizures since November. He's 3 years old. And this is just presented recently. He's had at least one episode per month where it lasts a couple of days. He's sneezing all the time. And I'd like your thoughts on that as well. Thank you.
Okay, great. We will do the answer off the air. And she just hung up. So the first question was, can a dog groomer do anything to protect themselves from having this type of flu virus introduced into their grooming situation? Is there any kind of preventative?
I think the main thing is just to interview the client before they have the pet brought in. In many boarding facilities, they make sure that the pets are current on vaccines for certain types of viruses and diseases. If an animal is sick or exhibiting signs of respiratory infection or sneezing or coughing, let the groomer know, or at least have the groomer ask that client, because if that dog is sick, then probably better not to bring that particular client into their home or into their business until the animal is treated and cleared by the veterinarian. And they could always ask certainly for, you know, that type of information. And then just simple disinfection that you want to do just in general.
Yeah.
So,
overall. Dr. Crawford, are there any practices that are being suggested for groomers or people that are in the industry that work with dogs all the time, maybe to preemptively ask people before they bring their dogs in whether the dog's been coughing or has a runny nose?
I agree with that, exactly what Dr. Tucker said. Interview. Ask the question, is your dog sick now? Has it been sick in the last 2 weeks? Or has it been around other sick dogs in the past 2 weeks? If the answer is yes to any of those three questions, then it would be prudent for the groomer to hold off on doing that particular dog until it has been cleared by the veterinarian to not be contagious to other dogs.
And then I wanted to ask, the other question that she had was about her dog that she said has been coughing a lot but then also presenting with seizures. Does this flu have anything to do with any kind of seizures?
Not in my experience, no.
No, okay. No. I think the seizures may be a separate entity than the respiratory signs. If the seizures are under control, then the respiratory signs are probably something totally separate. But if the seizures aren't under control, then these respiratory signs could be related to her seizures. So she should get that checked out from her veterinarian.
That would be have the vet check that one out. And then we have another question coming in from Beth, who has a question for us. Beth, what would you like to ask?
Hi, I was just wondering how it's actually transmitted. If you go to a place where a dog has been with this flu, can they get it, or do they have to have actual physical contact?
Okay, and that's a good question to review. And is it like a dog sneezes and you get snot? That's the problem? Is it dog snot that spreads this, or is it dog licking, or is it dander?
What? It's actually – it's saliva. It's the sneeze. So it's if a dog sneezes or coughs, they can spray that out to up about – 10 to 20 feet, and it's aerosolized. So it goes from the germs that are actually emitted out of their nose or out of their lungs or upper airway, and that they inhale it. So it's an inhalant and get contact. So that's
And Dr. Crawford, if a dog kind of has been sneezing in an area, but then they're gone and you walk through some of that stuff, can you track that into your house and then infect your own dog?
Yes, you can. So, yes, it's very a very efficiently spread virus, probably one of the most efficient transmitted virus between dogs. So, yes, direct contact with a sick dog who's coughing and sneezing, and then indirect contact with a contaminated environment that is contaminated with a virus, and Dr. Tucker called these fomites. So, yes, if the virus emitted from a coughing, sneezing dog settles on the person's clothing or their hands or any objects in the environment and another dog comes in with no immunity, they can get infected simply by contacting the contaminated items. Fortunately, again, I'll reiterate what Dr. Tucker said, this virus does not persist in the environment on the clothing or on the hands except for about 12 to 24 hours in the best of circumstances. So after that, it dies. So it's very important for use proper hand hygiene. Soap and water will kill this virus on the skin. Launder clothing that you think may have been contaminated by a virus in the environment. Don't forget your shoes. And then all the other objects such as dishes, crates, kennels, leashes, toys.
It sounds like this flu spreads just like people flu.
You know, it's pretty similar.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wash your paws. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask one more question. Looking beyond the dog flu now, Dr. Tucker, what kind of things do you see dog owners needing help for this time of year in Southwest Florida? It's getting hot.
Yeah, getting hot.
What do we need to keep an eye out for?
So I think I could spend like 3 days talking about all of the hot things that we have to worry about for the summer. But number one is that I see coming through the door is heat stroke. So let's not forget that it's 90 degrees outside at this time of year. And then you have the humidity in Florida as well. And so what we can tolerate, our pets necessarily can't tolerate. They're furry people. They're wearing a fur coat. And so they're also having to they tend to exercise harder than we do. So think about that when you're taking your pet out for a walk. Best times to go for a walk are early in the morning or late in the evening, not at the peak time of the day between 10 a.m. and like even 5 p.m. It's just too hot outside.
And I always feel bad for like huskies and the dogs that seem like they should be in cool weather. Do they suffer more than?
So that's a good question. A lot of people say because of their coats that the way their hair is that it actually has its own ability to cool them down. I think a bigger problem tends to be the size of the dog in terms of are they overweight? Because if they have excess weight on them, that makes it harder for them to breathe in general. So try to keep the pup's weight down. Keep them in a cool, air-conditioned environment. Don't let these pups be outside without fresh water available at all times. And most importantly, please do not keep your dog in a car. If you're going out and doing your errands and you have your dog locked in the car, even if you have the air conditioning on, God forbid the car shuts down and your air conditioning goes off, that temperature reaches to over 110 degrees very, very quickly. And it's fatal.
Those are some good points to keep in mind as we go into the summer hot season. But we're going to have to leave things there for now. But I want to thank our guest, Dr. Cinda Crawford with UF's College of Veterinary Medicine. Thank you for joining us. I also want to
check.
Thanks so much. And also Bonnie Tucker, a veterinarian working here in the Fort Myers area. I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you very much.
So keep your dog safe from the dog flu. Final words. That was just make sure to keep yourself clean and consider that vaccine. Coming up, we're on the precipice of mosquito season, and that means Zika virus will again loom as a threat, especially in Florida. Next, we'll talk with people leading the charge to educate young people about the risks Zika carries, especially to the unborn. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.
I guess I would, but no, I'd miss the train. Take a dog's life, just laying in the sun. I'll take a dog's life.